And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. Except for this week, where we're not going to be talking Star Wars Rebels. We're going to be talking about Dragon Con, because I just got back from Dragon Con, and I saw a lot of really cool shit, and I want to talk about it, and I'm super excited. But first and foremost, how you doing, Chris?
Good, and look at your notes. It's all Star Wars shit, too. It's tons and tons of Star Wars stuff.
I didn't put, I went to, the She-Ra panel and, karaoke and stuff. So, I didn't include those. But if you want me to, I could really talk about the She-Ra panel if you really want me to.
Yeah, it looks like we should probably stick with Star Wars and see where we go. It looks like there's a good amount here.
You know, it's so different because, if you've been listening to the show for a while, the last 4 years I've been a vendor at Dragon Con. So, because my job has been a vendor and I went to work Dragon Con. And it's such a difference to actually, be able... I forgot what it was like to, attend the panel. Go to the con and just enjoy the con and do what I want and not have to work it. It's such a difference. Almost half a decade since the last time I've been able to sit down and enjoy Dragon Con.
Yeah, just basically do the whole con the whole time.
Yeah. And, have downtime and be, look at stuff and be like, I'm not gonna go to that thing. Oh. But yeah, it's so different, to have time with my friends and to be able to go and do that. And it was just so much fun. I can't even, I forgot how fun it was just to, attend Dragon Con. And it's so big now, it was tiny when you last went, but,
It was not tiny when we were there. It was just tiny compared to what it is.
It broke an attendance record this year. It was 85,000 people this year.
There was an attendance record breaking when we were there, but it's been almost 10 years since Scott Gardner and I went to that. It was, I want to say, yeah, it's been almost 10 years. So
it's been more than 10 years. Because we met in 2000, it was 2008 when we met.
2008? Yeah, so it's been 11 years. Jesus. Yeah. So, yeah, there were, three hotels that year? So, I don't know how many hotels there are included this year.
Five plus the America's Mart. The America's Mart is where the vendors and the Artist Alley is. And the I think the gaming, too, is in America's Mart 1. And vendors and Artist Alley, I believe, is in America's Mart 2. But it's five hotels now.
Yeah, so it's almost doubled in size since we've been there. And it was enormous when we were there. It was, at night when you'd go out into the hotels, you'd be just walking through, slowly making your way through a mass of people no matter where you were. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I guess I should say 4.5 hotels because the Sheraton was just fucked crazy this year. Because earlier in the year, the Sheraton had an outbreak of Legionnaires' disease, so that it was unsure if the hotel would even be open by Dragon Con, as they were trying to figure out, where the Legionnaires' disease was in the hotel. And then they finally got it reopened about a week and a half, 2 weeks before the con, so everybody was like, whew, thank goodness. And then, there was a concert there, and I think it was the Ali and AJ concert, and one of the speakers caught fire, so they had to partially evacuate the Sheraton for them to put the fire out. So
it's a loud speaker.
Well, in good Dragon Con fashion, someone was then cosplaying the speaker on fire the next day.
of course.
So yeah, the Sheraton was just really. I was only in the Sheraton once, and it was to pick up my badge, mostly because I was I don't have anything in here, and I'd rather not take a chance just in case the Legionnaires isn't gone. So I just picked up my badge and then I never returned to the Sheridan.
Yeah, nobody wants Legionnaires disease.
My poor friend Kate was a volunteer for badges, so she was in the Sheridan for like 2 days. And she was like, well, if it's bad, I guess I'm dying. Bye.
She's a canary in the coal mine, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, but everything's fine. There is no more Legionnaires in.
That's good.
And so, well, I went to a shit ton of stuff. I'm actually going to move this one down because I'm going to save that one for last because it was such a big deal. So I'm going to get into some of the stuff I saw.
Right from the top to the bottom. Sure.
Yeah, I'm going to save that one for last because I got to see the world premiere of the first 3 episodes of Looking for Leia. And so I'm going to talk about that last because it was amazing. So I went to all sorts of panels this year. These are in no particular order, but first one on the list I have is the 20 years of Phantom Menace. And it was really interesting. Oh God, who was all on the panel? It was Thomas Harper, Alex and Molly Damon, and I think Caitlin and Charlotte from Sky Talkers. I think they were all the people. No, that's not right. That's the speculation panel. Fuck, I should have written this down because now I remember E.K. Johnson was on the panel. Anyway, there's people on the panel. Brea from Marvel was on it too. And it was just like reliving. It was different because it wasn't like a let's talk about Phantom Menace. It was, they started with like the hype of it. And they were talking about how like, how there hadn't
been. That was like the most exciting. Well, I like the Phantom Menace, but that like, I mean, the hype up to Phantom Menace was amazing, you know?
Yeah, they played an old, like, KFC Pizza Hut and Taco Bell commercial where, like, the Colonel, the Pizza Hut girl, and the Taco Bell Chihuahua were fighting battle droids. And when they played it, I was like, I very vaguely remember this. Like, it just, like, stirred something in my brain. And they were showing, like, all the merchandise, like, all, like, the Coke cans with everybody's faces on them.
And, it was ridiculous.
Like, and yeah, so it was cool because it wasn't just talking about the actual panel, because they did get into that. They got into like what they liked about the panel and stuff like that. But they talked about like the lead up and the hype of it. And I really enjoyed going to that one because I was also with my best friend Megan and her husband Lauren, who both hate the prequels. They loathe everything about it. But they wanted to go to the panel to hear from people who liked it. They wanted to hear a different point of view. And so they actually, like, really enjoyed it because, like, one of my favorite parts was there was a Jar Jar, like defender. Like, he was like, I liked Jar Jar when I was 20 when I first saw him, and I still love Jar Jar today. And, like, people had, like, little Jar Jar heads on a stick, like little fans, and they were, like, waving around, like, Jar Jar! And it was interesting because they told the story of how the guy who did the audio editing, not the audio editing, but the actual visual editing of Jar Jar's CGI. And when he first started reading reviews from the about Phantom Menace and saw that critics weren't liking it, he was really upset. And they were talking about how he, I wish I had the guy's name, but I don't, I'm sorry. They were talking about how he was on a jet with George Lucas and he was like reading all these reviews. George Lucas came over and he was like, well, what are you talking about? He was like, George, I don't think people are going to like the movie. And I don't think people like Jar Jar. And George looked at him and said, well, do any of them say that Jar Jar doesn't look real? And he was like, well, no. He's like, well, then you did your job. You did your job right. And then George Lucas was like, just give it some time, and before you know it, you're going to have a line of kids coming up to you. And they were saying how 10 years later, the guy was doing signings at Disney World, and he just had a line of children waiting to get his autograph.
Yep.
And so it was really, really cool because to like talk about the hype, because I very vaguely remember it because I was in middle school. Let's see, that was, what, 1999? It had to be 1999. That was 20 years ago. So yeah, I was in like 6th or 7th grade. I remember it because NSYNC and Backstreet Boys were having like their duo of the boy bands that year. And so like I very vaguely remember that, but as they were like showing all this like, all these commercials and like they were showing like a Pizza Hut box with like Padme's face on it. And so it was just a really cool panel to like relive like 1999 for the first half hour. And then the second half hour was just like talking about the panel, like talking about the movie and what they liked about it and stuff. So it was a really cool panel.
I would have liked to have been at that panel. I'm a defender of the Phantom Menace.
Well, I will say because I'm going to bring this up later, Tashi Station recorded pretty much every panel. So they, which is where it, if you listen to our audio panel from our audio panel, our animation panel from last week, they're the ones who actually recorded it. So I think they recorded every Star Wars panel. So just like look them up because Tashi Station, I think, has it. And I think they're going to be slowly releasing the panels over the next few weeks. So yeah, but it was a really, really, really cool panel. The next one I want to talk about is the animation panel very briefly, because you guys heard it last week. We put it out and John Lang was very, very nice to send us the audio. And Tashi Station was very, very nice to record it for us. But it was just a lot of fun to, like, sit down and talk animation with other people. Because I always talk to you about animation. So it's nice to hear, like, what other people think.
Right.
It's always fun to be... I didn't bring it up or anything, but it's always fun sitting in the middle of a panel and hearing everybody being like, man, I love the Mortis arc. And I'm just sitting there like... I didn't say anything, but I was thinking about it. I was really thinking about it because, well, guys, if you want to know our feelings about the Mortis arc, go back to Clone Wars and hear our feelings. Crit, I like the first episode. I still stand by. I like the first episode. You don't need episode 2 and 3. They're a waste of time. I know you hate it.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of any of the episodes of that. Yeah. I liked little aspects of it, but that's about it.
I like how it's continued to be important.
Right. It widened up some stuff about the Force, but they sort of abandoned it to move it in different ways, which I'm very happy with.
But it was just really cool to be able to talk with other people, though. Oh my God. I had a meltdown before the panel. So... And can I just say, Melissa Pye, who was on the panel with me, she is a 501st Captain Rex. And she's a huge Rex lover. She loves Rex. And so, like, she was so lovely. But, like, leading up to it, I was super duper nervous because, like, I listened to Sky Talkers. So I was really nervous about, like, meeting Caitlin and Charlotte. And because, like, I love their show. I'm a big fan of their show. And so I was super, super nervous. So I was just like, ah. And also the week leading up to Dragon Con, we're having, like, massive mold removal from our basement. So we've had people, like, in and out of our house for a week, like, just, like, tearing the shit out of our walls and, like, ripping apart our basement. But they have to have these, like, big hoses and stuff. So all the doors are open. So we're trying to keep cats from escaping because our cats are fucking terrified of everything that's happening around them. And so, like, it was just really stressful and I was just stressed from the con, like, leading up. So, like, me, being my wonderful anxiety-ridden brain, misread something from Sky Talkers. And so, like, I said something back in an email, and I was like, well, I don't think that would be a good idea. And then when I sent it, and then when I reread it, I was like, oh, fuck, I see what they're saying now. Oh, God, it's in the wilds of the internet. Oh, no. So I sent, like, 4 emails apologizing that I sounded like, and I was like, I'm so sorry I sounded like a dick. I'm sorry I'm an asshole. Like, I didn't mean it. I'm so sorry. We just have all the shit going on. And during this time, we lost Zeb. Like, Zeb got outside, and we didn't know where he was for, like, 10 hours. And, like, he's our new cat. You know, he's not fully settled into the house. And we were like, oh, God, what if Zeb never returns? So I'm having just, like, a panic attack.
He'll return.
He did. He came back. Zeb's okay, everybody. Zeb's fine. He's a fat fuck. He's going to come back for the food. Like, he came back and went right to the food bowl. It's fine. But, like, so I'm having a panic attack and, like, all the emails and stuff like that. And everyone's, like, super nice about it. And I'm just like, oh, my God, this is a terrible first impression. And I'm about to meet the Sky Talkers in, like, 2 days. And fuck! So I get to the panel and I was just, like, really chill. I was trying to be chill and, like, stuff like that. And so after the panel, though, I, like, went outside to smoke. And, like, Melissa came out and, like, she came out, too. And she was like, hey, and I was like, oh my God, and we started talking about that, and I was like, I'm so embarrassed about all that, and Melissa laughed, and I was like, because she's a little older than me, and she was like, oh, yeah, about that, I saw that, and I was like, that poor girl, she was me 10 years ago, and she was super lovely about it, and I was like, well, I'm glad that, like, it wasn't so bad, because our youngest member was a guy named Logan, and he was 17, and so I was like, and then I realized I said that I was a dick and an asshole in an email in front of a 17-year-old. oh my God, I can't believe I did that.
He's and heard Melissa much looked, worse.
Well, the thing is, Melissa looked at me and she was like, did you meet Logan's dad? He dropped the F-bomb, like, right in front of his son. I think you're good. So, like, yep. It was, I had, like, a total, like, meltdown. But, like, Melissa was super nice, and she, like, talked to me, and everyone was just super lovely. And I really did enjoy the panel after, you know, my anxiety attack of the emails leading up to it. But everything's good. We did the panel. It was great. Zeb's okay. He's back. He's a fat fuck. I love him.
All is well. Yeah, he was an outdoor cat beforehand, so he knows what he's and like probably you guys could let him out now and he would probably just like wander around and he's gonna come back.
Well, the thing is, he's a lot fatter than he used to be,
right? So he probably won't go as far away either. He might lose a little weight if he was an outdoor cat too, but then again, he might not. He might pick up some food outside too.
Yeah, so. So yeah, you guys can hear the animation panel that we put up last week. So just take a look at that. Also, special thanks to Thomas Harper, who took photos at the panel, because I told my friend Kate to, but I didn't tell her to take pictures of all of us. All of us. She took pictures of just me. So yeah. So the next panel I went to, and I took notes. I took very rough notes. I'm just kind of gonna go through my like kind of rough notes about it, because I was typing fiercely on my phone as I was doing this. But I went to the Star Wars Representation Matters panel, and it was kind of cool because Star Wars Rep Matters just launched their website, like, well, by the time the show comes out, probably about 3 weeks ago to a month ago. So they just launched their website, and so they were talking pretty much about diversity in Star Wars and why representation was important. And some of the things that they were talking about is like what makes a really good character for diversity. And they were talking about a character that can be a role model and fleshed out. It's about seeing yourself in a thing that you love and making sure that the behind the scenes has different backgrounds and experiences as well. That way that the story can be true and authentic. Think Black Panther. You know, the majority of like the writer and director were Black, and like they had artists that were Black and everything. So it's like that. You want to have those behind the scenes as well to make sure the story is authentic. They must be part of the plot and must be important to the plot. And that's why Val in Solo didn't work, because she was only in the first 20 minutes and they fridged her, and then she didn't do anything for the plot. The behind the scenes should be who tells the story, so people and women can feel like that they get to work in the industry. And then they talk more about like what drives representation. And they were saying that if we want to vote for more representation, money is how you vote in Hollywood. And they were talking about how important it was, because they got into how, like, the books and the comics is where all the representation is. All the queer characters are in the books and the comics, but we don't have them on screen. Except for someone like Holdo. Admiral Holdo is either bi or pan, but it's not good representation, because you wouldn't know that watching Last Jedi.
Right, right. It has... It's only something you're going to know from somebody telling you that at some point.
Mm-hmm. And so they used a quote from Timothy Zahn, who had said years ago, and this is me paraphrasing, it's not the exact quote, because like I said, I was typing furiously on my phone. He says something like, let's face it, the movies drive things in Hollywood. So if we want to see like more representation, we need to put our pocketbooks where the representation is. And so they got into talking about something like Disney Plus. It looks like Disney Plus is going to have a lot of the diversity shows, like The Mandalorian. It's a very diverse cast. It's probably the most diverse cast that we've had since Rogue One. And so we need to be able to, like, put our money there to, quote-unquote, vote for diversity to show Hollywood and the executives that these things are important. There also needs to be vocalizing that we want these things to exist. Like, the more we talk about it, the more prominent it becomes. They also talked about how we don't need to be pitting diversity groups against each other. So, like, say, just because we get, like, a prominent Black character in Star Wars, that doesn't make it a win for, like, the diversity of, like, an LGBT character. And a lot of times with Hollywood, they'll be like, well, we gave you this one character. Why aren't all of you happy? So it doesn't need to be, like, one or the other. It needs to be everything. And we talked a little bit. It was actually really funny because I met a very, very lovely guy named Suara. And Suara is a huge Resistance fan, and we were both in line. And he was like two people in front of me, and he started talking about Resistance and how it's only getting two seasons and how upset he was about that. And I like jumped out of line. I was like, this is my soapbox too. Can I join you? And so we both got up there and we were talking about how like we were both upset that something like Resistance, which is one of the most diverse shows to ever come out of Star Wars, is only getting two seasons, and how it was like terribly marketed. It's in a terrible time slot. It's a children's show on 10 p.m. on Sundays. Like, what child is going to stay up till 10 p.m. on a school night to watch this show? And so we were talking about that. So they were saying the response to that was, like, something like Resistance with its diversity, it might be something that they weren't sure that would work really well. So which is why they are safely, quote-unquote, safely canceling it. And so that's why we need to speak up more about these shows and, like, wanting these shows to be made and stuff like that. And they also talked about how there was so much pressure put on marginalized characters, because if a marginalized character is bad, then Hollywood will continue to ignore it. That's why it took so, like, why movies like Wonder Woman and Black Panther had to be, like, pretty much as perfect as they could be to have that first big step so we could vote with our pocketbooks. And it's not fair because they need to be able to, like, try again and again and again without these movies. And so, like, if a character with, like, a prominent LGBTQ character fails, it doesn't mean that Hollywood should ignore it. It's not fair. They need to, like, keep letting us have these chances to, like, go and keep doing and stuff like that. But really what it came down to is, like, if we want more diverse characters in Star Wars, we need to vocalize it more. We need to vote with our pocketbooks, and we just need to keep pushing because it is going to happen one day.
But it's
we
just where need it to seems to be working.
Yeah, slowly but surely, because we're getting a show like The Mandalorian and something like Rogue One. Rogue One did really well, and it's continued to do well.
I don't even think it works. I don't even think it works because people are like, we got to go support these movies. I think they're just very popular.
Yeah.
You know, when you include those diversity of characters, you will attract more people who see themselves in the movie. I think, you know, I mean, and not to say, you know, that you don't have to, like, support, like, Disney films because Disney already does it. But Disney already does it because they know where their bread is buttered. They have they have a lot of merchandising for everything they do, and they have an international audience. And they know there's equal amounts of little boys and little girls going to Disneyland or Disney World for their vacation. So they're not going to mess with anybody because they want everybody to buy their stuff. But when you do when something like Black Panther makes a shit ton of money, it may not be saying as much to Disney, but it'll say. It'll still speak to the other people who want to make that kind of money.
You know, it was a very interesting talking about, because it wasn't in this panel. It was in the, it was either the E.K. Johnson by herself panel or the E.K. Johnson Claudia Gray panel together. It was in one of those two. But they were talking about how the story group, Because I've had this conversation a lot with Megan about how she was, like, talking about how the Disney execs are, like, really controlling the story of Disney. But they were saying that the Disney execs who, like, are in charge of, like, the money and stuff like that, they have no say in the story. It's the Lucasfilm story group who have the say of the story. And the Disney execs have no control over that. And so I found that very interesting kind of insight that when we talk about how, like, quote-unquote, Disney is ruining everything and it's all about money and stuff, it's not actually the Disney execs. It's the actual Lucasfilm story group that decides what stories are being made and what are created. So I thought that was a very interesting thing to find out.
I've also often said this about Lucasfilm before they got bought by Disney, but I think George Lucas and Spielberg both in their own way wanted to sort of form their own Disney, you know? Lucasfilm didn't do the, like, I'm going to make a theme park, but he basically...
He did make a museum. We talked about that.
Well, yeah, and I mean, he started, you know, going into production. So he was designing audio systems and video games and had, you know, different branches for different kinds of media. So Lucasfilm sort of is following sort of the same model as... as Lucasfilm, like Disney, is so big that they really can't, they really don't want to piss anybody off, and they really want to sort of appeal to everybody, you know.
Yeah.
They want to be seen as tolerant because they want to be this universal thing that everybody can enjoy, you know. So yeah, so it's sort of a natural fit.
And they did bring up how, like, at D23, how they came out there with Marvel, and Marvel was like, here's Black Panther, and here's going to be our queer characters, and we're going to do Jane Foster Thor and stuff. And so there was a moment when the panel, when they were like, now it's Star Wars' turn, like, to give us these things, because it's all the same umbrella, and Marvel's really taking the step forward, so now it's just Star Wars' turn to, like, really step up to that plate. So, yeah, the Rep Matters panel was really, really interesting. If you want to see more of, like, their work, check out the Rep Matters website. Like I said, it launched about a month ago, about the time this podcast will be coming out. So, yeah, it was a really cool panel. The next panel I went to, which I won't stay too long because it was fine, which was the, well, a lot of, and I'll explain why it's fine in a second. It was the episode 9 fan speculation panel. Yeah. And this was Thomas Harper, Charlotte, and Caitlin from Sky Talkers, and Molly and Alex from Star Wars Explained. And the reason I say it's fine was because I listened to, except for Thomas. Thomas, this is my first time really seeing Thomas. But for Sky Talkers and Star Wars Explained, I follow their stuff, so I knew all their points because I listened to their shows. So, like, nothing they said was, like, surprising to me. I was like, yep, heard that in that episode, like, 2 weeks ago. Yep, this is on brand for them.
Did so, they talk like, about the Reddit plot leak?
No, that actually came out after Dragon Con.
Okay. I wondered about that.
I don't even really know about that because I don't take any of that for...
Yeah, it's definitely not real.
Yeah, but so, like, you know, they just talked about what they wanted to see. They talked a lot about Dark Rey and, like, what they thought that was going to be, and most of them agreed that it's probably either a Force vision or a dream of some sort, because they wouldn't put it out there if it was going to happen. So it was, they talked about, like, the theories about how there's going to be a Stormtrooper rebellion, and that's why we have the Sith Troopers, and so, like, If you listen to Star Wars Explainer Sky Talkers, like, I knew all their points that they were going to say. So, like, it wasn't anything new for me. It was probably new for other people in the room, but it was still a fun little panel. It was cool to, like, finally meet Alex and Molly, because they're, like, I've followed Star Wars Explain for a while now. I've used their show in our notes before. So, I mean, it was cool, like, finally meeting them and just being like, hey, I follow your stuff, and I'm one of your patrons. And they were like, that's really cool, thanks. So, it was cool meeting them, so, seeing them in person.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it wasn't anything, like, too crazy. If you do want to hear that, I know Sky Talkers has that panel up. Sky Talkers was insane, man. They would, like, get on a panel, and then, like, the panel would be on their show, like, 30 minutes later, man. Those ladies are on top of it.
They're up in their room editing and pumping it out.
And, like, the crazy thing about Caitlin and Charlotte is they went to D23 the weekend before. So they did 2 conventions, like, 2 weekends in a row. So I was like, ah, man, you guys must be so tired. I'm still recovering from Dragon Con, and it was over a week ago.
I did that once. I recorded at Paul Spataro's house when we were at a con, and then went back to the hotel and edited it and put it up. That night.
It was like 30
not
minutes.
Not 30 after. Minutes. Yeah, it was not 30 minutes for sure.
Like, it was hardcore. Like, I gotta give them props because they were on top of that shit. So if you want to hear the episode 9 fan speculation panel, go over to Sky Talkers because they do have that panel up. So it was a fun panel. I listened to all their shows, so I knew all their points going into it. So I put these 2 panels together because E.K. Johnson was on both, and she just kind of repeated a lot of her same points for the second panel. But it was the Queen Shadows and Handmaidens panel, and they're revisiting the prequels with Master and Apprentice and Queen Shadow. So Master and Apprentice is a book by Claudia Gray. She also wrote Lost Stars, which I finally read, and it was so fucking good. Lost Stars was so good. It hurt so good. Chris. If you ever read a Star Wars book, read Lost Stars. It takes place during the original trilogy. It covers the entire original trilogy, and it hurts so good. It hurts. It was so painful and wonderful to read. Anyway, So Claudia Gray did Master and Apprentice, and then E.K. Johnson is the writer of Queen Shadow and the Ahsoka novel, which we've talked about on the show before. And so those two panels, they were really interesting because I really loved Queen Shadow. So it was fun hearing E.K. Johnson talking about being like a lifelong Padme fan and how she used to be part of like the Padme. There's an actual specific group and I can't remember the name, but it was like the Padme Handmaidens group in like the early days of the internet, like right after Phantom Menace came out, and how like this group of women got together and they were trying to figure out which handmaiden is who, what their jobs are, how is Richard Armitage in there, because Richard Armitage is there. And she was talking about how like 1999 Richard Armitage was like a big fan of her, so that's why she brought his character Tanra into her book, just because she really wanted to write about 1999 Richard Armitage. E.K. Johnson is like my kind of person. She reminded me so much of my friend Allison. Like, they have very similar humors, and like, she just seems like the kind of person I am. Like, she loves talking about her ships. She loves talking about the boys that she loves. She said that if she could, she would have had Padme and her handmaidens go to a Backstreet Boys concert. And so, like, E.K. Johnson is just, like, my kind of person. It was so much fun watching her panels because she's just so funny. But, like, she was talking about, like, how it was so much fun to be able to write something so feminine, because she wrote her Ahsoka novel to be more, like, broad. And they were talking about, like, the difficulties of writing young adult fan fiction. Or not fan fiction, young adult fiction. Because when you write young adult fiction, it's for ages 13 to 18. And E.K. Johnson was talking about how 13-year-olds are very different from 18-year-olds. They're in two totally different places of their lives, and that's why young adult fiction is, like, such a weird genre, because you're trying to like, appeal to this broad spectrum. So she had originally wrote Ahsoka to be more for, like, the general masses. She tried to make it, like, as broad as she could. But she wrote Queen Shadow, which is the Padme book, specifically for, like, very, very feminine. She wanted to be a book about... She talked about how she wanted to write a story about Padme that was away from Anakin, and how her, like, friendships with, like, Sabe and her friendships with her handmaidens was separate from Anakin. Because everywhere we see Padme in the rest of Star Wars, she's tied to Anakin Skywalker. So she wanted to write a story where it was just something that was Padme's, and it was just about that. And she talked about how she was really excited because she got praised for writing, like, such diverse characters. Like, she has queer characters in both Ahsoka and Queen Shadow. Keira Knightley's character, Sabe, is now canonically bi because of E.K. Johnson. Like, she made Sabe canonically bisexual. And so she was like, you know, whenever I have this point where I can make up, like, a story for a character, I just do it. And I just keep doing it until, you know, Lucasfilms, like, tells me to rear back. And they didn't rear back on that. She was like, I was actually very surprised that they were like, yeah, you can make Sabe bi, it's fine. And so it was really cool hearing about, like, how she wanted to, like, weaponize femininity and, like, talk about this and write this book. And then Claudia Gray was just lovely. A lot of her panel had to do with like Lost Stars, because a lot of people, because Lost Stars is considered like the best book in the new canon, which now that I've read it, I absolutely agree. It is the best book in the new canon. It's so good. So I took some notes between their two panels. I wrote, I want to be friends with Claudia Gray because she's so thirsty and I love her crush on Ewan McGregor. Now that I read that note, I remember that now.
Well, she's getting her Obi-Wan show, so.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Master and Apprentice was her Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan book. That's what Master and Apprentice is about. It's pre-Phantom Menace about Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. And so she was talking about how, like, she had this huge crush on Ewan McGregor when she was younger. So to be able to, like, write a book about young Ewan McGregor, she was talking about it. And I was like, this girl is so thirsty and I love it. And I had asked the question about how closely they work with the audio dramas, because I just didn't, because I, you know, I loved Catherine Tabor reading the Padme book. So E.K. Johnson said that, like, she didn't work at all with the audiobook. Like, she hadn't even heard the audiobook yet. But Claudia Gray didn't work really closely with the audiobook for Master and Apprentice, but they just released an audio drama called Jedi Lost. And Jedi Lost was a backstory about Count Dooku. And because this was coming out around the same time as Master and Apprentice, where she had to write a lot of Dooku content because Qui-Gon was Dooku's apprentice, and like there was a lot of, there was Rael Avaros, who's another apprentice of Dooku. She worked really closely with the audio drama Jedi Lost just to make sure they had a lot of the same similar stuff. E.K. Johnson was very aware when writing Sabe and Padme that people would, because she knew that people would ship them, but she wanted to make sure that they had a platonic relationship. And that was important because, A, there's a power structure. She didn't want their power structure to come into play. And she wanted a story separate from Anakin. And they were very clear about this because this comes up in both of their books. In Star Wars, they cannot write the words, quote unquote, human trafficking. They are not allowed to put that in that books because the people in Star Wars are not always human, which I found interesting.
So they would say slavers or, you know, slavery.
They can't always say that either. Like they said that they had to be very careful, but they couldn't use words human trafficking, which is why in a lot of times when you read a Star Wars novel, you see words like souls, S-O-U-L-S, souls, because they can't actually use the words human trafficking. Claudia Gray wants to write a follow-up to Leia, Princess of Alderaan, where it's teenage Leia and Holdo doing badass missions with Enfys Nest. And, oh, so I found these two points interesting. So they talked a little bit about characters they couldn't use. And E.K. Johnson, when she wrote the Ahsoka novel, she wanted Rex and Hondo to be main characters in the Ahsoka novel. But Lucasfilm flat out said no. And this was before, like, all the Galaxy's Edge stuff came out, so it makes sense with Hondo, because Hondo was off doing Batuu and all that stuff. But I found it interesting that she could only have Rex in the flashback of Siege of Mandalore scene. So that was interesting. And then this other one broke my heart. Claudia Gray wanted to write Cad Bane in her books, but Lucasfilm Story Group said no to that. And I screamed out. So I was like, we could have had more Cad Bane content? And Lucasfilm said no?
Well, you know, cross your fingers. Maybe he'll show up in The Mandalorian.
Well, technically, he might still be dead, so we'll see. It's never confirmed whether or not he's alive. And then this was the last tidbit that I found really interesting. E.K. Johnson wants to write a young adult Palpatine novel, and where Palpatine is a young adult in like his teenage years and his 20s. And when she said that, the entire room went, ooh. And she was like, yeah, I might seem sweet and kind and nice, but I want to write that novel. And when I told that to Pablo Hidalgo, he was like, you? And she was like, yes, he is messed up. I want to write that book. So if you want E.K. Johnson to write a young Palpatine novel, tell Lucasfilms and let them know. So that was the E.K. Johnson and Claudia Gray panels, the two of them. I just kind of mashed them together.
Called the Half-Blood Prince.
Yeah. So, my next panel is a panel I wanted to go to, but when
the panel that got away,
which was the one I wanted to go to most of all, which was the Thrawn panel. Cause you guys know me, Thrawn's my blue husbando and I love him. So I was, but it was the last panel of Monday, which was weird that they left it so late. So the last panel of Monday was the Thrawn panel. And while I was there, at Dragon Con that Friday, my friends from college, Sarah and Colin, came up to me. And Sarah and Colin have been really good friends of mine for a long time. We've known each other for a decade. We met in college. And they've been dating for 13 years. They've been engaged for 3. And so I was having lunch with them on Friday, and Colin looks at me and goes, you want to come to our wedding on Monday? And I looked at him and I was like, what? And he was like, well, we were thinking about it, and all of our family is in town for Dragon Con anyway, and we've been together all this time, and our friend, when I say our, I mean all three of our friend, Blaine got ordained the other day, and so we just decided we're going to have a wedding on Monday, and I was like...
Well, yeah, what about the license, though? As an ordained minister, I have to sign that license after
He had the
wedding.
He had the license.
Oh, okay.
He had the license, so I was like, yeah! Yeah, and then I started crying in the middle of the food court because I was like, you guys are getting married on Monday! And I started sobbing in the middle of the food court. It's fine.
So the panel that got away got canceled by the two people who didn't get away.
Yeah, so it was totally worth it. Megan went to the panel and she texted me a couple things. Timothy Zahn had brought up how he would love to do a Chiss Ascendancy book where it's like Arlani and Eli Vanto and Ronan and the Chiss Ascendancy. And he had asked the room of like who would be interested in that. And the entire room raised their hand. So if you want that book, please let Lucasfilm know and tell them to make it. But so yeah, I didn't get a chance to say to hear the Thrawn panel. I'm looking forward to when Tashi Station puts it up because I want to hear it. I really, 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 really want to hear the panel. So just keep an eye on Tashi Station because they're going to post it. And I just want to mention this. I listened today at work to the Solo panel from Dragon Con thanks to Tashi Station. So that one's up too, and that was a really cool, fun panel about like why people like Solo, and they talked about like the characters and stuff. So while I didn't go to that panel, I got to listen to it. So thank you, Tashi Station, for putting all this stuff up. Okay. You ready for the big thing?
This is a big one, eh?
Mm-hmm. So, at Dragon Con, this was the thing that I was the most excited for. When I heard that they were coming to Dragon Con, I didn't want to go to anything else. I cleared my entire schedule around this one thing. And that was the world premiere screening of Looking for Leia. So, Looking for Leia... Oh, I just got a chill. I was just like thinking about it. Looking for Leia is a documentary of a documentary by Dr. Annalise Ophelian. She decided to make this documentary about women and non-binary Star Wars fans and how they express their passion. How they express their passion and their identity and their connection and their love for a galaxy far, far away. And on the website, it says, women have always been Star Wars fans. It's just taken 40 years for the world to notice. And the women's fandom is passionate, creative, and reaches far beyond the legacy of Leia. Looking for Leia is a joyous gender justice project that shifts the traditional male-centered narrative of geek culture, explores the way women and non-binary fans create galaxies of their own. Sit back, because we're about to finsplain Star Wars fandom to you. So... That's just from their website. Oh my gosh, I can't even begin to talk about Looking for Leia. Because, for one...
No spoilers!
Well, I was going to talk about it, because originally Looking for Leia was just going to be a movie. It was going to be a documentary. But they've been recording now for a few years, and they've gone to like celebrations and D23s and now Dragon Con and stuff. They have so much content that it's going to be webisodes instead. I can't remember if it's 6 or 9, but they're premiering this fall, and they're 10 to 15 minute webisodes. And we got to see the first 3. And on the way to the panel, let's start with the lead up. So I was really excited just about like the idea of being in the same room as Dr. Annalise, because she was on Lousy Beautiful Town. I loved that episode. It's the episode I talked about most when I was like, when you listen to Lousy Beautiful Town, listen to this episode. It's just the best. And it still is. And it's just she's so eloquent and she's so funny and she's just kind of raw and passionate. And I love that about her. So as I was walking over to Looking for Leia, because the first 50 people online got swag bags, so I'm a very proud owner of a Looking for Leia enamel pin now. I was getting ready to walk across the street and I had blue smeared on my face from my Thrawn cosplay. And I was holding my sign that said, I kissed a Thrawn and I liked it. And I was looking across the street waiting for the cross rock. And I saw her. I was like, oh my god, that's Dr. Annalise. And I see her that she's looking right at me. And I was like, oh my god, Dr. Annalise is looking right at me. And so the light changed.
Oh my god, she's looking right at me.
Well, for one, she's beautiful. And she's wonderfully queer.
She's so beautiful.
She's so beautiful. And I'm queer. And I got even queerer looking at her because she's gorgeous. And so, like... The light changes, and I don't move. I'm just staring at her. And she comes, like, running over to me. And I was like, oh, God, she's running at me. Oh, God. And she was like, oh, my God, are you a Star Wars fan?
She's charging.
And she was like, yeah, are you a Star Wars fan? And I was like, yes, you're Dr. Annalise. And she's like, yes, I am. And I'm like, I'm on my way to your panel to get in line. And she's like, oh, there's a line. I'm like, well, there will be when I start it. And so, like, you might have seen me put it up on Facebook, and it's now, like, my my Twitter picture for my profile, that really nice photo of me, like, with the blue on my face, so with the sign that says, I kissed the throne, I liked it. She wanted to take a picture of me, and she put it on her Twitter, so I was just like, so, that was wonderful. And she was like, okay, we'll see you at the panel, and I was like, bye!
Yes, you will.
I almost cried, it's fine. So, we get to the panel, and we sit down, and we got to see the first three episodes of Looking for Leia, and like, it's so much more than I thought it was going to be. Like, guys, you're not ready for Looking for Leia. It's more than just a documentary. Like, it's so touching and genuine and raw. So the first episode was all about fanzines, and it had these two lovely older ladies, and they just have like boxes and crates in their house of like old Star Wars fanzines from like the 70s and the 80s. And it's like the origins of like Star Wars fan fictions. And they're like pulling out these like fanzines that came out like after A New Hope, and they're opening it, and there's like all this artwork that people did with all these like fan fictions that people just printed. And they were like, yeah, like, this one was about, like, before Luke and Leia knew that they were brother and sister. And, like, she has all this artwork from, like, the 70s. And it was gorgeous. And it's not, like, one or two crates. It's, like, boxes upon boxes of fanzines this woman has saved. And it was just beautiful. And then the second episode was about women who build droids. And how they got into droid building, why they love droid building. And, like, they were just like, yeah, I'm a teacher, and then I come home and I build droids, and I taught myself how to use 3D printing, and it's cool because, like, I'm the one that needs tools and stuff, and, like, my son comes up to me if he needs help with tools, because that's a mommy thing.
Right.
And like, the woman who was in it was actually the droid builder. She was there, and she was like, it's so funny when people come up to my husband, and they're like, I love your droid. He's like, yeah, my wife built it. And, like, seeing their face change, like, she talked about that because she was on, they had the panel after we saw the first episode, the first three episodes. But the one that got me, which made the entire room cry, was about how Star Wars had been translated into Navajo language for the first time. And it was the first movie ever to be translated into Navajo. And so they had the voice of Leia and the voice of C-3PO, because a woman did the voice of C-3PO for the Navajo showing. And they were talking about how they got together to do this, and how they, like, were on this ranch, and they, like,
premiered
it. Did they
do it live, or did they do a dub of it?
They did a dub.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a dubbed movie. And they were saying how it was so important because they had elders in their tribe that was watching it. And this was the first time that elders within their tribe ever saw a movie in their actual language.
Darth Vader. It's on the day though, in Kota. Imperial Senate, but he had that Esado. But he in age, he had that.
Hello, don't spell us another in it. Your Highness, the age of Batman, the Nashan, eh, not Adanest, eh, not Chigi, that is La, Asian Jilia, eh, Hindla.
Hola, Hatishi Bayan Kitchen. She Imperial Senate, it's gotten slow, Elderon, go, Kevin Yesha.
Rebel Alliance, but not Chinle, you were your own source.
And how touching it was to hear their language in a movie, and how they used Star Wars to help preserve their language, because, like, Native American languages are dying in the U.S., and being able to preserve their language through Star Wars, and, like, I'm getting teary, like, everyone in the room was sobbing. Like, there was not a dry eye. I was with Megan, and Megan is not a crier, and she was in tears. And I'm a mess. You guys know me. I'm an emotional mess. So I was, of course, just sobbing my fucking eyes out. And it was just so touching. And I'm, like, sitting here going, I can't imagine what's in the rest of these episodes. Because it felt so wonderful to, like, see these wonderful, amazing women just, like, preserving fandom and preserving their own culture and finding themselves in the fandom. And it was just incredibly moving, and it's incredibly touching, and I can't. Like, I'm just so excited to see the rest of the documentary when it comes out this fall. As of right now, they haven't announced where it's going to air, so I don't know where it's going to air yet, so just keep an eye on their Twitter. But, like, y'all, you're not ready for Looking for Leia. It's so powerful. It is probably one of the most powerful pieces of Star Wars media I've ever seen. It is touching, and it's warm, and it's heartfelt, and it's lovely, and it's strength, and it's just, it's so wonderful. And I can't. I'm so excited to see the rest of Looking for Leia. I can't wait. And I'm ready to rewatched, like, it just felt so special just to be able to see, because I ever since I heard of Looking for Leia, I've just been waiting for it. Like, I'm more excited for Looking for Leia than I am for Tross. Like, I'm more excited to see this documentary than I am for The Rise of Skywalker. And it was just such an honor to be able to see the first three episodes. And it was worth it. It's so worth it. And I, when it comes out, guys, I can't recommend it enough. Ugh.
I was just going to say, I love documentaries, so I can't wait. I love Star Wars documentary. I love especially when they hit niche things. One of my favorite books is a self-published or, you know, micro-published book through a university about somebody did one of their final treatises on people who cosplayed Star Trek. And it's completely from I was like, oh, this person was a Star Trek fan, you know, and picked a topic on Star Wars. No, they weren't at all. They just happened to be in a hotel once and saw a Star Trek convention and were like, holy cow. And so it's a total, like, sort of outsider's view on, like, the people who like, you know, make their own costumes and what they do to make the costumes and how they had to learn to do it and stuff like that.
Actually, that came up in the fanzine episode. They still had cosplay from the late 70s because they were saying, we don't know what the Jedi Council, what Jedi would wear. So we just made these costumes of what we thought they would look like. So they had these old cosplays from the late 70s, early 80s, before we ever saw the Jedi Council.
They weren't just like copying costumes. They were doing costume design and stuff like that. Yeah.
But I think you would especially like the fanzine episode because they talked a lot about like early Star Trek fan fiction too.
Star Trek fan fiction is when you said boxes full of fanzines, I was like, I bet you these women started out with Star Trek. Because, I mean, Star Trek, yeah, you could have crates and crates and crates full of Star Trek fanzines. I'm jealous of the fanzines because I know how much those goddamn things are worth. They're worth buku dollarinos.
Yeah.
But I love fanzines too. I love printed magazines, and especially ones just made by nerds for nerds. Come on.
Yeah. But I just, guys, like, you're not ready for Looking for Leia. Like, it's beautiful and it's wonderful, and I can't wait for everybody else in the world to see it. Like, I can't wait for you guys to see it, so. But those were all the panels I went to at Dragon Con. let me say, that's all the Star Wars panels I went to. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I could talk about other panels if you guys really want me to talk about, like, She-Ra and stuff. But just a few, like, kind of dumb tidbits from around the con that just happened. My dumbass Thrawn cosplay went off with a hit.
Well, that's going to be the artwork. That's definitely got to be the artwork for this week's episode.
Use the very nice picture that, like, Dr. Annalise took, because that's probably one of the best pictures I've ever seen of myself. But it's, if you haven't seen it and you're not looking at the artwork right now, let me explain what it is.
You had the appropriate look on your face too for your costume. I'll just put it that way.
I know. So my dumb Thrawn quote-unquote cosplay, it was me and Megan came up with this idea last year at Dragon Con, and the very last hour of last year's Dragon Con. So I've waited a year to do this quote-unquote cosplay, and it's just a joke where I have blue smeared across my mouth, and I just have a sign that says, I kissed a Thrawn and I liked it. That's it. That's the cosplay. And people just found it fucking hilarious, and, like, I'm sitting here, like, people are asking me for my, like, my photo, and I'm sitting here thinking, there's a fully, like, Chewbacca over there, and you want my photo? What the hell?
Yeah,
like,
but how many Chewbaccas, let's be real about it. If you go to a lot of cons, you see a lot of Chewbaccas, see a lot of Stormtroopers, You know, you see a lot of Captain Americas. You don't see a lot of people with Thrawn smeared across their face.
Yeah, and it was actually kind of funny. Like, because Megan and her husband, Lauren, went to the Bunny Hutch. And the Bunny Hutch is Thursday night. It's a big party where people do Playboy Bunny versions of different characters. So she was Thrawn, and he was Eli Vanto, done as Playboy Bunnies. So they had leftover blue paint. So Megan was like, here, I'll just give you the blue paint so you don't have to buy any. And so all I really had to do was make the sign. And... So
right,
like, cool.
But that's the thing is the idea of it is way, you know, I mean, well, sometimes the execution is amazing too, but sometimes something just simple that makes a statement or a joke gets people's attention more than anything else, you know?
And actually kind of the funny thing, because I was already planning on going to the Timothy Zahn signing because I wanted to get a book signed for my friend Gabby, because my friend Gabby lives in Mexico. And she was saying how, like, they never have big fan conventions. So she was like, I'm never going to get a chance to meet Timothy Zahn. And she was like, any merchandise that gets imported here is so expensive. Because, like, shipping by itself is, like, $15, $20, $30 just to ship an item to Mexico. So I was already planning on going to the signing to get her. Gabby, don't listen to this in case your package isn't there yet, because I mailed it out today. So I got her a book, Thrawn, signed by Timothy Zahn. Anyway, so when I was on the way to looking for Leia, I had the blue smeared on my face and I had my sign, but I was waiting. I was outside smoking before the panel, and this guy looks at me and he was like, that's hilarious. Timothy would love that. And I was like, oh, really? He's like, hi, I'm Timothy Zahn's handler. And I was like, oh, nice to meet you. And he was like, are you going to any of the signings? And I was like, yeah, I'm thinking about going to the signing tomorrow to get something signed for my friend. He was like, you have to wear that tomorrow. You have to show him that. And I was like, okay. And then, so I'm in line and I have the blue smeared on my face and I'm holding the sign and I'm just sitting here thinking, I'm holding a sign saying that I made out with his character. I'm like, I wonder how well this would actually go, because I could see how this comes off as really creepy that I'm about to meet the creator of Thrawn, say, with a sign that says I made out with his character.
I think I'd be just fine with that. Yeah, well, I would be.
Well, when he saw me, he just started laughing. He was like, that, because I met Timothy Zahn last year, so I already know, like, Timothy Zahn's a very lovely person. And so, like, I knew he'd be chill, but I was kind of nervous because it's just kind of weird. Like, you know, I didn't want it to be weird. And he started laughing when he saw it. He was like, can I have your picture? And I was like, only if I can have a picture. And so he got up and we took a picture together. And Timothy Zahn looked at me and said, just so you know, real chiss don't smear like that. And I was like, oh, that's the joke.
I know.
yeah, like, that's the joke. And so he was so lovely because I got the book signed for Gabby and he looked at me and was like, do you want me to sign your sign? And I was like, okay. So I handed him my sign and he signed my sign for me too. So I got two signatures from Timothy Zahn. But he was super lovely too. He thought my cosplay was hilarious. I did go to the last party at Alderaan. The last, because Dragon Con is...
Is that like the nerd version of party like it's 1999?
Kind of, like, so while Dragon Con has all these panels and stuff like that, it is very much a party convention.
Yes,
there are
it's
parties
mingling.
Yes. While I was at last party at Alderaan, there were three other dance parties with other themes going on across the con. Like, it is a party convention. So last party at Alderaan is just the Star Wars themed party. And it was so awesome because, like, while they had all this, like, regular music too, they're sitting here, like, remixing, like, Star Wars tracks to, like, dance, like, throbbing dance beats. And it's just, like, all these Star Wars nerds and, like, lightsabers everywhere.
Father and son.
So that was a lot of fun to go to as well.
Dinosaur costumes apparently everywhere too.
Dinosaur costumes are very, very, very popular at Dragon Con.
Yeah, because they mass produce them now, so you can buy them on Amazon now.
I have such a soft spot for those inflatable dinosaurs. Like, I have just the biggest soft spot for them. I love them so much. I know they're so overused, but they make me laugh. So every time I see one, I love them.
I just saw some girl, like, in high school acrobatics doing the parallel bar with one of them. And she does a flip and dismounts on all fours. You know, lands on all fours. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, like, I have such a soft spot for those damn inflatable dinosaurs. I love them so much.
Oh, actually, no, she's in an inflatable unicorn outfit. What am I thinking? But it's the same idea, sort of.
Yeah. And so, the last tidbit, and I felt so proud of myself, because I felt like I leveled up in my nerd points. The very first night at Dragon Con, I experienced the running of the hoods. Do you know what the running of the hoods is?
I have no idea.
So, this has become a thing at Celebration.
Wait, and did you put up video of this before?
I did.
I saw the video, but I still don't. I'm trying to think of... Okay, explain it. I'll remember it while you explain it.
So, I have to remember which movie it is. What movie does Cloud City... I feel so dumb. Cloud City happens in Empire, right?
Empire Strikes Back.
Okay. I knew it was Empire, but there was a tiny part of my brain was like, no, it's not Empire. And I'm like, but brain, it is Empire. My brain was like, no, it's not. And I was like, shut up, brain, it is. So there's a character in Empire Strikes Back named Willrow Hood. And he is a legend. And he, like, runs through the background holding, like, an ice cream machine.
Yes.
And so, you know, he's had, like, toys and stuff like that made of him. And Willrow Hood is, like, this very, like, niche canon thing. At Celebration, they have what they call the Running of the Hoods, where people dress up as Willrow Hood with their ice cream machine and do, like a run through Celebration. And it's, like, 50 of them. That, like, it's a traditional thing at Celebration where it's, like, 50 Willrow Hoods just go, like, jogging through Celebration dressed as him holding their ice cream machines. Well, there was, like, a mini version of it at Dragon Con. It was, like, 10 people. And I spotted them the very first night doing, like, the Running of the Hoods. And I was like, oh, my God! I've never been to Celebration, so I'm, like, really excited to see the Running of the Hoods here at Dragon Con. And so as they were passing by, like, a group of people were like, what the hell is that? And so I was like, it's the Running of the Hoods. And they're like, what is that? So I had to explain to them, like, who Willrow Hood was and what the Running of the Hoods was. And
sit down on this toadstool and I'll tell you about Willrow Hood.
Yeah, but it was like, when it was done, I felt like I had gone up in my nerd points. Like, I had leveled up in, like, my nerd leveling. And I was like, huh, I just had to explain that to a normal person. Ha 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 ha. And I just felt so smart because I was just like, I had to explain that to a person and I'm so fandom smart. Ha 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 ha. But it was just really funny because I've never actually seen the Running of the Hoods because I've never been to Celebration. So it was just really cool to be able to see, like, a mini version of it at Dragon Con and then, like, explain it to a person who didn't know what it was. So it was just, it was a lot of fun. So that was my Star Wars Dragon Con.
It's pretty amazing. That's almost as much Star Wars as you would see at a Celebration, so. Which
yeah,
I would imagine I mean, that Dragon Con is that much bigger than Celebration, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it really was a lot of fun. And because I remember the last, like, few years when I've done Dragon Con, when I was a vendor, like, I would only see, like, what, maybe one, maybe two panels for me to talk about here. So... yeah, like, to be able to be on a panel and to, like, go to as many panels as I did and to, like, cosplay and, like, to meet people like E.K. Johnson and Claudia Gray and Dr. Annalise and to see Timothy Zahn again, it was so much fun. And you can hear these panels that I've talked about on Tashi Station. If they're not released by the time this episode comes out, just keep an eye on them because they really did record, like, a ton of
everything.
Pretty much. Like, they recorded everything. So just let them know that I sent you. And yeah, so that was my 2019 Dragon Con, Chris. Yay!
Awesome. We'll come back next week and we'll be back to our regularly scheduled program after this sort of little end of summer blip here of 2 weeks. 2 weeks
pretty
off
much,
from the format.
Well, pretty much Chris and I record 2 to 3 episodes in advance and we were both
Yoda
gone
gets to take care of his skin condition for a couple weeks, so he'll be a lot less crabby, hopefully, next time.
Yeah, we gave Yoda a break. So, but yeah, Chris and I record 2 to 3 weeks in advance, and Chris and I were gone for 3 weekends, so we were all caught up. So we're like, this is a nice time to talk about Dragon Con for 2 weeks to get us caught up again. So, but yeah, cool. Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is our website. And you can see all our podcasts there. You can sign up for an RSS feed there. You can go to iTunes and sign up for us there. Although iTunes, I guess, has been a little sketchy for people here and there. iTunes, it sounds like, is still messing with their new direction or no direction or whatever the hell they're doing. So whatever with the iTunes. But you can find us there, too. You can find us on Facebook, where we have the Two True Freaks podcast page, where it's a group where we post all our podcasts. We have the Two True Freaks Cantina, which is sort of what it sounds like, just sort of an open forum to go and talk about nerd stuff. And we are also on Twitter. We have Two True Freaks on Twitter, helmed by the legendary Gene, the podcasting machine. Gene, possibly one of the ultimate completists. If he was like a Marvel character, like the Watcher, he would be like the completist, where all we had to do was mention I was on a Is It Jaws, where we were talking about the animated Lord of the Rings, and I was talking about, you know, how the Silmarillion is a really hard read, which made Gene go like, time to reread the Silmarillion and read this other Tolkien book that I needed to get around to, by the way. So that's Gene. But that's where you can find me. Where can they find you, Hope?
Well, first I want to say, somebody reached out to me. Her name is Heather Taylor. Hi, Heather. Welcome to the show. She found us through me being on Lipstick and Lightsabers. So yay. We have a new listener, so I just wanted to say, hi, Heather. I hope you've been enjoying. She was like, I've listened to all your Rebel stuff, and I was like, wow, really? That's dedication. Ooh.
Time to, you're running out of stuff. Time to give that, I don't know if you need to give Clone Wars a revisit or just go there for the first time, but if you do go there for the first time, Hope and I'll be there to see you through the entire thing. Even the new stuff coming up.
Yeah,
we'll be there.
I just wanted to say hi. Like, she reached out to me and she was like, I like you guys' show. And I was like, oh, new listener, hi.
Yay. I'll tell you what I tell everybody else. Sorry about Yoda.
apparently, like, she's like in the Two True Freaks Facebook group too now. So, because it was when I posted about having extra buttons and she was like, oh, I saw this in the Two True Freaks group. Like, do you still have buttons? And I was like, oh, you're the Freaks group now. Welcome. You're now a Two True Freak. Welcome. So, yeah. Well, you can find me at JGuys and Jedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. I'm doing all this from memory. I also have a website called geekygirlexperience.com. Yes, that is my website, as I do all this from memory because it's not in front of me like it always is.
You can do it. I know you can.
Thanks. I've been talking a lot the last hour, so my voice is very shot now. I also write fanfiction on Archive of Our Own, or AO3 for short, the Hugo Award-winning Archive of Our Own.
That's right.
My main story is called Forces of Gravity, and I have a side project called The Lucky Leku, which you can also hear on the show because I did the first two episodes as a podfic here. Now that I'm done with Dragon Con and I don't have anything planned until, like, next year, I'm ready to have, like, a return to fanfiction. So I'm just real ready to, like, sit down and start banging out more chapters because this year has been weird and I haven't been able to write as much this year as I wanted to. So, yeah, I'm very excited to return to fanfiction. So be on the lookout for that. I'll be posting it on my Twitter. So, and yeah, that's everything.
Excellent.
I can't think of anything else. So come back next week where we return to Rebels.
Yes. Yay. It's a mopey droid episode.
Oh, yeah. Next week is the Forgotten Droid with Chopper and AP5. That was a fun one, you know?
And like, Governor Jesse Ventura.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun because we were debating, like, nicknames for characters and stuff like that. So it's a very laid-back episode, guys. Like, it's nothing too deep. It's just, like, a fun return to Rebels. Like, we were recording the episode. We're like, yeah, this is fun.
I'm gonna body slam every goddamn droid in this room.
Yeah.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Two True Freaks has been brought to you today by Damanzo Core of Milan, Italy, and by the letters F and U.